name is Lawrence, and my name is Paul Williamson, on behalf of the petitioner, Mr. Mark Holman. This court is only too well aware, this is the second time I appeared before you in 1 week, but the issue that we address today is every bit as equal to importance as what we talked about last week. Last Friday, the State Canvassing Board passed a motion that they would reject all challenges based on duplicates or originals. And making that decision, it's our position today that that could lead to a result that's no exaggeration to say is unthinkable. It's a result that they reached because they wrongfully concluded that it was unavoidable. And it's a result that we think is utterly unnecessary, given some very limited, targeted due diligence relief that we'll be asking for.
As I understand it, they concluded that they didn't have the wherewithal to resolve the problem.
That's the essence of what was held. We have this interesting irony that a number of them, including two justices of this court, said that there was a high likelihood that in doing this, they would have double counting in the ultimate result.
Isn't the problem there that that's based on speculation because we don't have a record in front of us? So we don't know one way or the other?
Well, some things we do know. And what we really know is that election law rules were not followed in approximately 25 precincts, Your Honor. And they're not followed in a particular way.
Counsel, why does this issue not have the same fate as the one last week? In other words, having concluded that rejected absentee ballots don't constitute an obvious error in counting or recording, why would this one not have a similar result?
Well, I think there are two answers to that, Justice Beeson. First of all, the obvious errors statute that you, I think, rightly held last week did not incorporate evaluating reasons for rejecting ballots because it wasn't counting and recording. Doesn't apply to this issue. This issue has to do with counting and recording. And if, in fact, election officials counted the same ballot twice, both the original and the duplicate, that is counting and recording, they recorded the wrong number because they voted twice. And it's really equally important because the basic fundamental principle is one person, one vote. And last week, this court intervened.
Counsel, then, what is your best evidence that double counting of votes has actually occurred here? I know that there are some affidavits, and in one affidavit of Ballstein, Exhibit 1, there is 138. It seems to me that there is a response from the Franken campaign that at least attacks three of those. It gets down to 120. But even looking at those, it seems to me there's no direct evidence of double counting, and which begs the question, isn't this an evidentiary issue that's best left for an election contest?
Well, and again, I think that's part of the issue that you identified, Justice Beeson. Let me say this. What do we have proof of? We have proof that election laws were applied because election law in Minnesota makes very, very clear as a mandatory matter that when an original ballot is rejected by the machine, you take that ballot and you have a duplicate.
Just hold it. Did you say defy?
Excuse me?
Did you use the word defy or just not follow when you were talking about election laws?
Not follow.
Okay. I mean, defy has a maybe even a malfeasance tone to it.
I didn't intend to say that.
Okay. I just wanted to be sure of the level of the concern that you have.
Yes. I appreciate that, Your Honor. So you have the necessity when you have the original to read original one and then a duplicate with a Republican or a Democrat, two people, different party, doing the duplicate. And they run the duplicate from the machine. And then they put the original ballot in a separate envelope. And that particular envelope says is original ballots for which duplicates have been made.
And so you put original ballots in that envelope if the duplicates have remained. Now, the problem is when you have duplicate ballots here, they should have, as according to law, very, very mandatory, original one, duplicate one. Now, the duplicates are run through the machine. And so therefore, if you count both the duplicate that was run through the machine and the original ballot, you have duplication.
Counsel, I apologize for interrupting you, but where in the record is the piece of paper you just held up? Where is that?
It's an attachment, I think, to the Amy Goldstein affidavit. And so we have a whole variety of different elements here. We have that particular envelope. We have incident reports of something like 150 with respect to no duplications that seem to explain in many different precincts the reason why there seem to be more votes than voters. If we have more votes than voters, we have a problem on the machines. In addition to those, we have a whole variety no dupes on them, which means they could not find a duplicate for an original ballot.
Counsel, you're asserting that we have more votes than voters, that you've made the factual case.
There
are more votes than voters.
That's part of our suggested relief, if I get to that, Justice. The machine, here's
your question. Let me just ask you a question. As part of this recount process, there was not a comparison made of the number of people who voted with the number of ballots counted, was there?
That's right. But we have the machine counts, which seem many times to tie in with the difference between the originals and the duplicates.
So the machine count is not the record of how many people voted in that precinct.
That's not the final record, though, you're right.
And that final record is not part of your evidentiary argument, your basis.
What we're saying is that we have the predicate. The reason why the justice has said there's a high likelihood of counting is we have the predicate to do some limited due diligence. And what we want this court to do is this, if you will indulge me. First of all, we think both campaigns should identify the precincts in which they believe this occurred. We checked all the polls and believe they're 25 precincts. Secondly, the local election officials look at the election rolls. Now, the rolls have three things in them. First of all, the people who signed in were already registered. Secondly, the same day registrants. And number three, they have the absentee ballots. So there's an unambiguous number that local election officials did conclude in one of these 25 precincts were the people who showed up. And if, in fact, there were more votes in that precinct than there were voters,
Council,
you might have a problem.
Why isn't this just precisely what would take place in an election contest?
Well, there are elements of an election contest that certainly can take place in an election contest. But as this court held last week, some principles are so important that if there is a way to intervene in a way that doesn't require it, the court should. In that case, it was to ensure that every vote was counted. The counter opposite is to ensure that no vote is counted twice. If one vote, a valid vote, is not counted, that disenfranchises the voter. If the vote is counted twice, that disenfranchises all the other voters, according to the Reynolds case, and dilutes the enfranchisement of everybody. And what you could have here is double counting. There's a high likelihood, according to Justice Anderson, as a result of this double counting, there will be certification of a result that's not accurate, and maybe because of the closeness of this election, it may determine who wins, and under Anderson, may conclude that the loser is declared the winner. Now, in terms of what we're doing here, if we find in a precinct that there are more votes than voters, we know there's a problem, and if that precinct, those election workers find that that ties in with this duplicate and original issue, then they can report that to the county board.
I think I understand all of that, but I want to ask the same question, or a similar question to Justice Page, and that is, why isn't your issue best left for an election contest? It seems to me that if we assume that these
hard-working election judges in every attempt to satisfy Minnesota Statute 206-86, and they put the, pulled out the damaged or defective ballots, and we end up outstanding these efforts with numbers that don't tie out. In other words, the number of absentee cards, sorry, the number of duplicates don't match the number of damaged originals, then you ask us to believe or to assume without any evidentiary support, just some deductive reasoning, that that means that there were duplicates that were put into the election that were not marked duplicate. But it seems to me the Franken campaign argues that it's equally plausible that an election judge may have simply pulled the original and for whatever reason didn't get around to preparing a ballot. It was a busy day. And given those two plausible reasons that this occurred, why wouldn't the election contest where the people who actually know something, the election judges, come and describe what happened and decisions can be made on that evidence?
Well, because there's a reason that I think the candidacy board said there was a high likelihood of double counting. We not only have this process, we know that the law was not complied with. We know that in 140 or 150 cases it wasn't complied with. In Turkey,
do we know how it wasn't complied with?
Yes. We know exactly how it wasn't complied with it. Because they didn't list the number of original one with a duplicate one. And so there are missing dupes. There are no duplicates listed.
But there's only the original ballots. But we don't know whether the duplicates were ever made, do we?
Well, we do have not only all the circumstantial evidence, but we have Cindy Reichardt saying this is a big problem because she believes, according to various things she said as the director of elections in Minneapolis, that this is a problem because the duplicates weren't marked, as does an election judge here in Minnesota. So we have something to accredit it. And in the right case, the Larson case, the most other cases in America that examined this in Indiana and Illinois, they thought the prospect of double counting was so significant that they said in those cases, under similar laws to ours, if you don't have a linking up of the original and a duplicate, you don't count any duplicate that doesn't have the original, and you don't count any original that doesn't have a duplicate.
Let me for a minute here focus on Minneapolis Ward 8, Precinct 7. And I think it's the information in the Lily Hog affidavit that deals with there was a search, and there were found 11 ballots, duplicates, which matched 11 original ballots challenged. That information would seem to undermine your premise that in every case there were unmarked duplicates that were run through the machine, and that there were then these originals that are double counted. Now, I mean, you're asking for extraordinary relief. You do accept that, but an injunction. You're asking us to stop the candidacy board basically in its tracks and have them do something. But this affidavit would seem to undermine your premise that they were unmarked, in every case, unmarked duplicates that were run through the machine.
Well, yes, what we're not saying is that we're not asking this court to decide that issue. What we're asking for is less draconian relief than every other case that's looked at this issue. And that is, it is very easy and very simple. It takes about an hour and a half for each one of these precincts to go back and compare the voter rolls, the people who showed up, with the number of votes.
Okay. And if I know that, and I'm really dealing with that, and I expect we're going to hear from the other side that said it's not that easy, talking about. But I want to move on to another question that's about, you know, the level that you have proven something to us. And here I want to focus on is that it's a statute, if I may, is the 204C20 subdivision 1, which that describes what the vote total is in a given precinct. And you have no disagreement with that statute. statute that basically said election judges shall determine the number of ballots to be counted by adding the number of returned envelopes for accepted absentee ballots to the number of signed voter certificates or the number of names entered in the register. That is the statutory number of voters in a given precinct.
Yes.
Do you agree with that?
Yes.
Okay. Then my next question is that where have you shown to us? I mean, you've shown some comparison to machine vote tallies, but that's, after all, what a recount is about, to check the machine. Where have you shown to us that there are more votes counted in any given precinct than the number of voters as would be determined under 204C20? That's a problem I'm having with your burden of proof when I juxtapose that to the extraordinary relief you're asking. And so just give me an example of where, in fact, you have shown that to us.
Well, what I'm asking you to do based on loss of credit is to direct the local election officials.
Now, Counselor, I do understand what you're asking us to do, for the most part, I think I do. But to do that, you have a burden of proof to show us that the relief that you're asking for, you're entitled to that relief. You know, I think the last time I heard it, you know, the barn is burning down, the house burning down, and you're likely to prevail. And so the question is, again, tied to 204C20, subdivision 1, total number of voters statutorily determined in a precinct. And where you show me, or show the court, that there have been more votes counted than what the statute says is the number.
Well, so far we only have access to machine counts, Your Honor. And we do have reasons why, after hearing all kinds of arguments on this campus, and more people didn't think there's a substantial likelihood of double counting. And we do know that when you make an original, and you say original ballot, for which you look at the name and put in that box, there is a duplicate. And that duplicate has been voted.
Let me interrupt you for a minute. I just want to try to understand the rule of law that underpins really what you're seeking. If we, let's say we had a precinct where 100 people voted, and everybody agrees 100 people signed in and voted, and the machine count says there's 99, and then there's an envelope called original ballot, and there's one ballot in an envelope. Okay? Now, that's a validly cast ballot, the one that's in the envelope, right?
Yes.
And the machine count is off by one, and so why would we not, as an evidentiary matter, conclude, well, the election official must have neglected to run a duplicate ballot? Because there have to be 100 votes. And so, is the rule of law that regardless of how the numbers add up in the end, if there isn't an original and a duplicate that absolutely match, we throw out that voter's vote because the election official made a mistake?
No, there's not a need for an absolute proof that you have very serious concerns that this election will turn on double voting.
And I want you to answer that hypothetical.
Yeah, and
in my hypothetical, how would your rule of law answer that question?
Machine vote may not be totally accurate.
Well, then let's hand count the ballots. Well, there are actually 99 ballots, and that matches up with the machine, the ones that went to the machine.
Well, if we go back to the election officials, and in your example, and there are 100 people who actually were voting that day, and we have 110 votes, Because this ordinary thing was
done. No, I'm asking you to answer my hypothetical.
No. No, and I admit with respect to the machine totals that it is possible that the machine total might not be accurate in a particular case.
I'm not asking if the machine total is accurate. I'm asking, we have 100 people we know came into that polling place and voted. There's one ballot in the envelope that hasn't been through the machine, and 99 went through the machine. Can't we assume that the election judge just simply neglected to create the duplicate ballot, and why should we count the one in the envelope?
That is one alternative. And if you did a check with respect to that rare case, that's your rare, because they only put these original ballots in the box and the duplicate has been made. If you don't, what I suggest, that would be taken care of.
Counsel, as I understand at least the rule with respect to duplication of ballots, says all original ballots of required duplication must be placed in an envelope marked, quote, ballot for which duplicates were or are to be made, end quote, which suggests that it is possible that the originals were put in the ballot, in the envelope, and that duplicates weren't made.
Well, you know, again, we have an exhibit. It has been made. Let me reply to this question this way. What happened when there were 133 missing ballots?
That is prima facie evidence that, in fact, the duplicates were made. I just wanted to understand how you connect those dots.
Well, if you put the original ballot unmarked in a document that says original ballots in which duplicates have been made, there is some prima facie evidence that a duplicate has been made, because that duplicate has been counted. There is a serious problem of disenfranchising the entire electorate.
I have two questions I want to ask you.
Sure.
The universe of relief that you're asking for, the 25 precincts, are they all set out in your exhibit number one?
Yes, I believe they are.
Okay.
They're all set forth.
And the second question I want to ask you is, you rely on the Wright case from Indiana. Is Wright consistent with what we said in Anderson?
Yes, I believe it is.
And what I'm getting at there is in Anderson, and I'm paraphrasing now, but in Anderson we spoke about technicalities not trumping the will of the voter, if you will.
Yes.
And it sort of seems to me like the Indiana Supreme Court and Wright went a different way.
Yes. There was a balancing of the policy argument that they came out this way. And that's why we're not at this point even asking for that. Because we think it's similar to what happened with 133 missing ballots in Minneapolis. What happened there was there were 133 potentially missing. There wasn't any real proof as to exactly what they were missing. What did the canvassing board do in that case? Cindy Reichert went back and looked at the voter rolls, just as we asked for a year.
And similarly, in the case that we heard earlier, there wasn't, I would suppose you would say, there wasn't any actual evidence that absentee ballots had been improperly rejected. There was media accounts of that, and there was speculation about that, but there wasn't ever actually any evidence.
That's absolutely right. And at one level, you have enough predicate to say, we can do a limited study here to make sure that not only has any absentee ballots, that valid votes are not discounted, but we can have assurance, some measure of assurance, that we haven't counted twice when there's a lot of appearance. Even having your fellow justices sitting on the canvassing board saying it's very high likelihood that we don't have
our fellow justices are here.
I understand.
They don't have to wrestle with this as an issue the way we do.
That's very true. But I will say they did support the motion. And in the case of one of the members, Mr. Anderson, I guess Justice Anderson, he said he was very disturbed. Because there is a real possibility when they sign their names and their imprimatur on declaring winner that the election itself will turn on the fact that Minnesota was to comply with. And if we put our head in the sand and don't do the limited due diligence to see whether there are more votes than voters in the very limited number of precincts, we have a little problem. Cindy Reichert did that.
Because
we got 133 votes and found that by the voter rolls, there were 133 votes missing, and the court, the canvassing court, said, yes, that was extrinsic evidence. That was comparing the voter rolls, and they counted those 133 votes. We're asking for the same thing Cindy Reichert did before with respect to a limited number of 25 precincts. So with some comfort, we could say, we've looked at it. If, in fact, there is the Justice Anderson alternative, that somehow there's a steel bag, and they have those in them, then there will be no harm. Nothing harmful happened. With respect to all those we think were double counted, they will be disclosed. And therefore, the canvassing board can take that into account. We think that there's enough predicate here, enough suspicion here, yes, enough evidence here to indicate to this board that they should take that similar step to what they did last week, an extraordinary intervention. And by the way, what he did last week was a lot smarter than what I suggested, which was a sevenfold test, and if you boiled it down to something much better. But an extraordinary intervention is for simply to do the due diligence to settle this matter. The perception of the election.
been declared based on double voting is so significant that this court can order that modest relief. And we ask the courts to do that.
Thank you. We have 5 minutes for...
Mr. Magnuson, could you, when you come up for rebuttal, just, it, perhaps my stuff just isn't organized, but I cannot locate the piece of paper that you held up. Yes. Thank you.
Mr. Dimbovich.
Please report. Good afternoon. I am Bill Fox, and I'm from the office of the Senate Committee. I want to start by wanting to start. I might as well ask, what's wrong with Mr. Magnuson's recommendation that we get this resolved up front?
Because we don't believe that these issues can be resolved without evidentiary hearings, discovery, cross-examination. There are too many variables. There are too many potential problems. They will likely vary from precinct to precinct, maybe within a precinct. And on the record before this court, it can't be resolved. And by simply going back and sending us to try and agree with each other, we had an agreement. Okay. The agreement was you count originals. That was the agreement for the recount. That was the probable promulgated by the Secretary of State and approved by the state canvas. They want to change the rules under which this recount was conducted. We don't think it's necessary to change the rules, but if they feel that the rules were not applied properly, if they feel that somehow the rules were improper,
it seems to me that we have some affidavits here, and I'm concerned that, for example, the affidavit of Cynthia Rankert says that early in the recount process, individuals conducting the recount process discovered a discrepancy. Number of ballots marked as duplicates, and the number of original ballots in the original ballot envelopes in one of those precincts. And then we go on, and there's an email, and there is a process which, if there is a difference, discrepancy, the ballot is challenged, and you participated in that process and challenged it.
Right, but the canvassing board decided, and we agree with this, that those challenges should not be considered by the canvassing board. When the polling campaign started doing it to preserve our rights, we did so as well. But we don't agree
with the issue where we have, you have one explanation of what happened. The Coleman campaign has another and it seems to me we have in between the hardworking election judges who we have to at least make some presumption that they attempted to comply with the statute, with this sort of statute 20686. I mean, why wouldn't we conclude that the reason for this discrepancy is that a duplicate ballot was not marked duplicate, but it was put into the process and counted?
Well, it's an assumption, but I would suggest, Your Honor, to use a phrase from another context. There are genuine issues of material fact as to what happened.
Well, but our law presumes that government officials comply with the law. I mean, we have case law, decades old, that say that. We presume public officials comply with the law. And the statute here says that the duplicate ballot must be counted in lieu of the original.
Not the recount, Your Honor. The statute does not prove it.
So your argument depends, does your argument depend entirely then on our deciding that 206 does not apply here?
206 by 86.
I apologize, yes.
Our position, Your Honor, is that 206 and 86 applies to the machine count on election night and does not apply to a hand recount. Thereafter, in a hand recount, the fundamental thing you're trying to do is determine the intent of the voter.
And if we, I get the argument that you made in your brief, if we reject that argument, do you necessarily lose today?
No, because...
Well, if 206.06 applies, and if double voting that the Coleman campaign argued.
They are, which public officials are you going to present by the law? I assume that we are going to make the state can support, which took the action which is appealed from here today, comply with the law, and therefore, their decision not to count the duplicates, to only count the originals, and not to hear the challenges, is the presumptively correct decision.
What about if we apply the presumption to the official who is applying 206.086?
And you're throwing out the decision of the canvassing board, and you are rebutting the presumption that they acted properly without an evidentiary foundation to do so, Your Honor.
So the presumption applies to the canvassing board, but it doesn't apply to the election judges?
Yes, Your Honor. In this proceeding, the presumption goes to the canvassing, the correctness of the canvassing board's decision.
But, Counselor, I'm having trouble with that. Under 206.86, you have the statutorily defined procedure of how an election judge is to deal with a damaged or defective ballot. Under our law, we presume that officials, in this case the election judges, comply with that law. Why would we not apply that in this instance to those hardworking election judges who were there on the day of the election, counting the election, and that their focus was to make sure that duplicate ballots were put into the process and were properly counted?
With all due respect, Your Honor, I think that the answer to your question is the same as Justice Gilbert's. The presumption is in favor of the state council. There is evidence in this record that errors were made. That presumption creates a genuine issue of material fact, and it needs to be resolved in an evidentiary hearing. And
I'm having trouble reading that canvassing board into 206.86.
Well, but, Your Honor, the petition under 204.44 that's before you today is for the action of the canvassing board. It is the canvassing board's decision that you are reviewing. And they are there to present to that they have made the right decision, unless Mr. Magnuson is able to rebut that. Their decision to turn made a judgment based upon what was before them, which was not an evidentiary record. They concluded that they could not consider this at the county board level. That is presumptively the correct decision unless you conclude otherwise. But it is a presumption that is so entangled in facts that are so different from precinct to precinct. And nobody, anyone who comes in here today and says they know and can explain what happened is guessing. It's speculation on my part, it's speculation on Mr. Madison's part. And you're not going to get to the bottom of it by simply sending it back to election officials. There's too many variables here. There's too many possibilities for dispute. It's not like a situation last week where there's a ballot with four reasons to reject and one of those reasons, you know, you had an obvious error. I want to go to an issue that I think is quite important. Mr. Magnuson said that the fundamental principle underlying their petition is one person, one vote. Now that phrase has been thrown around a lot in the last few years. But what is one person, one vote? If you go and look at the one person, one vote cases in the United States Supreme Court and its progeny, every one of those cases that we can find involves redistricting. Every one that we can find involves redistricting. And in the seminal case of Reynolds versus Sims, the court was redistricting these. The U.S. Supreme Court said something that I think really applies here, and it, to some extent, I think informs how you apply the Anderson case. Reynolds versus Sims, the majority opinion says, we realize that it is a practical impossibility to arrange legislative proceedings as an identity of residents or citizens or voters. Mathematical exact interpretation is hardly a workable constitutional requirement. Let me drop a footnote right there and quote another case called Green Peanut Company versus Pencil. And they say, we must remember that the machinery of government would not work if we're not allowed a little play in its joints. We would suggest that no matter which way you do this, if you count only duplicates, there are going to be originals that don't get counted. If you count only originals, it is possible that they can go. But it's both are just possibilities. Perhaps the possibilities wash each other up, perhaps they don't. You would need a fully developed evidence. had they gone through that pile of 100 and found no, zero.
Right, but none of that, but that isn't where we are.
Well, there
we are. We're only here because there were duplicates. The issue was only raised because when the hand recount was going on, aha, there are ballots marked duplicates.
Well,
so then the election official goes and looks for the original envelope.
Well, there are precincts out there where there were no duplicate numbered ballots on, but there were original envelopes under the Secretary of State's rules. Those were not open. So under Justice Meyer's hypothetical, if they had found in the 100, if they had found in the 99 ballots that they counted out of the 100 that registered, no duplicates, that one original in the envelope would not have been opened up under the Secretary of State's rules. It is only if you found no serial number duplicates in the pile, then you pull them out and then replace them with originals. Under the rules, you're not supposed to match them up. Now, at the end, there was a precinct apparently where the numbers don't match. No, we don't know. Keep in mind.
And it's in those precincts. I mean, that's what I'm trying to get at with my question, and I apologize if I'm asking it inartfully. But in those precincts where there is a match, because let's hypothesize there are four marked duplicates, but six original in the sealed envelope, what the Secretary of State's office, what their direction was in that situation is you count the six originals.
Correct. But if we're going to go back and do this over, we're going to have to go back and try and reconcile the ones with the envelopes that never got opened as well. I mean, you're not going to just...
Has the Franken campaign made... I mean, I'm hesitating to go down this road, but... I mean, has anybody... You're not here today arguing that.
Well, Your Honor, the challenge is Rule 9. You know all of Rule 9, and you'd have to go back and redo this count in order to do it fairly. You'd have to reconcile. You'd have to go to the voter register to the...
Let me ask you this. Don't the people of Minnesota, aren't they entitled to know that their votes weren't counted twice?
Well, they're also entitled to know their votes were counted. And in Justice Meyer's hypothetical, somebody's vote didn't get counted. And under the Secretary of State's rule, it shouldn't have been counted. And if you're going to say people's votes should have been counted twice, then you need to say, but those who didn't get counted once would need to get counted once.
Counsel, are you in agreement that we're only talking about 25 precincts here?
No. Because we chose not to challenge those places. In many places, challenges weren't allowed because of the Secretary of State's rules. All 4,001 precincts would have to be re-canvassed for this to correct this problem. They cherry pick what they want to look at. But if you're going to be consistent, if you're going to change this recount is conducted according to Rule 9. If you're going to throw out Rule 9, which is really what you're being asked to do, based upon no evidence amounting, you've got to go back and reconduct the recount without Rule 9 under whatever new rule you have. The whole point here is consistency.
I would assume that's because we run into the dreaded equal protection problem that we were talking about last week.
Yeah, I don't want to use the names of former candidates for residency, but yeah, that's the problem.
Are you maybe stopped from seeking that route because you didn't raise the objections the Cohen campaign did?
We're not. Well, let's put it this way. If they're not stopped, I don't think we're stopped because the agreement that was made was an agreement between everyone. And we're not stopped from raising it in Congress subsequently. If it's determined, you know, if you decide to grant them their relief and don't grant us, grant a prayer of relief, then you're creating a contest where one need not have it. The point here is this recount was conducted according to rules that gave consistency. And what the campaign board decided is to stick with the rules, to stick with consistency. If you go back and change it, you can't change it for 25 precincts. You have to change it for 4,001 precincts. I don't see how else you can do it. And that's what goes back to. If they didn't like this rule, they should have agreed to it. They should have brought this 204B in a way that would create chaos. I mean, you would have to let do a lot of it.
Council, maybe I'm dense and not following this, but I'm looking at least at one of the applicants. There were 600 separate incidents. There were 150 involved in duplicate and original ballots. And there was this process by which they were at least reviewed, and the non-matching original ballots were challenged by four county candidates and our
results that was sent to the Secretary of State's office, and those county candidates
you are tied in with the relief asked by appellants. So if they've asked the wrong person to do something, the wrong entity, if they get their relief, who's supposed to do what they are asking to be done? I mean, what is the entity that is properly identified to do what appellant or a petitioner wants to have done?
Your Honor, if this court was to grant relief, I think it would have to be only in the recount. Would it be to either have the state canvassing board or the Secretary of State
states that are reported to her, cities that are reported accurately, are opinion that there are a number of possibilities that exist here.
Is your client's position that there's also the possibility of undercounting? Or is it also put in the envelope that from which the bookings weren't made and run through the machine?
I understand your question, Justice. There's a possibility that the originals that were either damaged or needed to be placed in the envelope. It's possible that duplicate ballots were not made. It's possible that they were made. Not counted. It's possible that they were made accurately and went through accurately. But she cannot, I can't point to the fact that at this point to say which one of those assumptions is the correct assumption, or that they may not be visible all of those.
Thank you, Counselor. Your time is expected. Attorney General Swanson.
A couple of very good points, I think, so already mentioned.
duplicate and an original, the original's got doodling on it, the duplicate doesn't, if you only look at the duplicate, how do you challenge the problem with the original?
Well, the idea was that you link up, you assume all of the property, as it has in almost every precinct except this 25, and you would find the duplicate, then you go to the original, and you look at the original for voter intent to see if there's a count. That makes sense, that's rule nine. It has nothing to do with the issue before this court.
Let me ask you this, with respect to Hennepin County's argument that the town canvassing boards have had nothing to do with this recount, and therefore should be dismissed, how do you respond to that?
Well, we've gathered all the suspects, just as they discussed it, the county has the supervision of all the ballots, the individual local election officials can do exactly with respect to this, what they did with respect to the missing 133 ballots. So we're all invited to the party to correct this error. The fact is, although there is some deference given to the canvassing board, this court crossed that last week when they ordered that recommendation made would not be done for serious reasons. The court was right last week in trying to ensure that there was, on the basis of no real proof of an allegation, that there were wrongfully rejected absentee ballots. And take a look at this, but by both parties in there, seriously doing that. With respect to this, 204B44 assumes that this court has the power, the canvassing board doesn't. It has the power to correct errors before there's a canvass. Now, we know there are errors. There are clear errors. Things weren't done right. What is the significance of those errors? This court ought not to remain passive because this particular issue may decide the entire election as to who's declared. And as
counsel is, and I just want to follow up with and it really gets into the question of why now. This is as opposed to an election contest where there can be evidentiary hearing and fact-finding. And then said, last shot, I said, can you tell me why now? Why shouldn't this be resolved in the election contest process? I mean, the Indiana case was where they had a trial court judge, and I think in Illinois also. So why now?
For the same reason that you acted last week. Why now? Because there was a possibility that ballot votes, absentee votes could not be counted. Here there's a very high likelihood for the canvassing board that double votes are going to be counted. They should not wait for a canvass because, as the Reynolds case said, the right of suffrage can be denied by a debasement or dilution of the weight of a citizen's vote just as effectively as by wholly prohibiting the free exercise of the franchise. You did it last week. For one side of the coin that every ballot vote be counted, the court should do it this week so that no double vote happens.
Counsel, your time has expired. Thank you. This matter will be taken under advisement. We are adjourned.
All right.
Thank you.